Welcome to Beauty for the Soul, sharing the secrets to finding the beauty and harmony within yourselves and the world around you. Now here's your host, Marjorie Rothstein.
Welcome to Beauty for the Soul. Because beauty is not just a luxury anymore, but experiencing beauty is a necessity for everyday happiness and joy. And today I'm thrilled to share with my audience Lisa Marie Jenkins. And the show is called Igniting Brilliance Through Feminine Leadership, Waking Up to Your Passion, Purpose, or Calling. Lisa is the founder of Igniting Brilliance Through Feminine Leadership, a consulting company providing professional business women mentoring, personal and professional development, and peer group interaction to support each other in becoming authentic and powerful women in order to help heal and transform the way we all work, lead, and live. Lisa Marie is a Huffington Post blogger, has delivered keynotes and workshops to professional women at Google, Xerox, and many other women's organizations. Prior to launching her own consulting company, she spent over 20 years in senior sales and marketing roles at Fortune 500 high-tech companies and was recognized as one of the 200 most influential women in her industry. One of the reasons I asked Lisa Marie to be on the show today is because I really feel her message is unique when it comes to 21st century women and their role in human evolution. Lisa Marie knows that women will have to step up with courage and confidence to invoke the divine feminine in order to help heal and transform the world. Creating masculine and feminine balance within ourselves and in the world is key to transformation in both women and men. But women will be the ones to lead this paradigm change. A true feminist is not about equality, but about leading from the heart and shifting how we all work, live, and lead. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest for the show, Lisa Marie Jenkins. So welcome to our program, Lisa.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here, Margaret.
My pleasure. You know, I've been reading your book, and I'm really enjoying it. I thought it was going to be, just another book, you know, but your personal, you know, it's just like, another book about women and that men aren't our saviors and the whole thing. But, you know, you really bring in your own personal stories about how you've overcome many, many cultural paradigms, and we're shifting out of that. And I love that you're really talking from ground zero about what's going on in the corporate world and how you've been able to achieve great success there, but may not necessarily have had the opportunity to shift out of that business mode into being a strong character in your relationship. So here's one question I have is you talk about how women often go to sleep on themselves and their own passion, purpose, and worth once they find their Prince Charming. And I find that very interesting because I relate, and I never thought about it from that perspective. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's where the title, Wake Up Beauty, It's Not About the Prince, came from. It was someone I was working with many years ago, and she said to me, and I went to her for, I was going to her for several reasons. It was sort of just some spiritual counseling and so forth. And she and I was going through a breakup at the time, and she looked at me, and she said, "Honey, don't you know the biggest fattest lie we've ever been told as young girls is that Sleeping Beauty woke up when Prince Charming kissed her?" She says, Sleeping Beauty did not wake up at all when Prince Charming kissed her. No, no, no. Sleeping Beauty went to sleep. She went to sleep on herself and her own passion and purpose and worth because she believed that romantic love would provide that to her.
Yeah.
So it goes to, you know, the conditioning, societal upbringing, years of legacy. It's patterned in our DNA from the days when women literally couldn't survive without, you know, a man's strength and size. And so I think what happens is, it's like anything, we're looking outside of ourselves for fulfillment, for contentment, for wholeness, for happiness. And, you know, the romantic love for men and women can just be another avenue of, once I have that, right? Once I have the holy grail of romantic love, then I will be free and content and happy. And so what happens is women often think, well, I found this romantic love, and men too, And so now I've forgotten to stay connected and wake up to my own passion and purpose and worth, because romantic love is not meant to provide that. We're each responsible for our individual selves. And it's really about a relationship to, whether you call it God, the Holy Spirit, the divine self, higher self, right? That's our primary relationship. And oftentimes women make a man their primary relationship in life instead of their own relationship with something higher.
I so relate.
I think we all can. We all can.
You know, it's funny because I did have, I was going down that road, and I had to take a side street and find out that the road I was on was leading me maybe to some place that I probably should not have been going to, because I wanted to drop everything and just fall madly in love and focus on the relationship. And that, when that didn't work out, it was like, oh my God. And then I had to really take off all those blindfolds and see, you know, what I was doing for myself was just hiding out. And, you know, there's so many dreams I have, and I was stuck, you know, having to stay in the boundaries of the relationship, you know?
Yeah, yes. I actually just had this conversation with a woman I met recently at a conference, and she's very young, 32. She was married once when she was very young. She's from Romania, but she's been in the U.S. since college. And we had this conversation, and she's doing amazing things in the world and working on her MBA. And we had the conversation that how come we're so much stronger in accomplishing so many great things in the world when we're single? And for women, I think it goes back to, we go to sleep on ourselves. When we get in, even if it's a good relationship for the most part, we lose our priorities, and we suddenly put too much focus, emphasis, dependence on the man in our life. And it's really easy to do as a woman, because we're taught to be others focused, and, you know, all of our focus and attention goes on helping and supporting and guiding others. And it's almost as if sometimes we can make men sort of demigods. And
definitely.
And that's not fair to the man either, right? That's way too much pressure on him to be responsible for our happiness, and it's not humanly possible. And so it's got a two-way street, but the point is, Marjorie, is that even when you're consciously aware of that, as I know I was in a relationship for a few months, from October through the holidays, and even somebody that's completely aware, completely conscious, I saw myself giving up my power again and losing my place, losing my stride in the things that I'm passionate about and what I'm trying to accomplish in the world. And so it takes a lot of conscious effort to continually move through that we're each responsible for our own passion and purpose and worth and staying connected to something higher, and that always has to be primary. So I think it's always a work in progress. And, you know, some people don't struggle with this, of course, but it's certainly, the romantic love is certainly a common avenue to give away our power.
Yep, I know. Each of us has our own personal lessons to learn, and some of us are in this category, and other people just, you know, somehow the relationship stuff isn't a big issue. And I wish I was one of those, but I guess whatever, you know, it's just, it's challenging.
Well, one of the reasons, and you made a comment early on when you said you thought my book was just going to be another kind of relationship book and so forth, is I wanted to be really vulnerable in it and really share my feelings and my experiences that were just really vulnerable, and how I perceive things or how I felt about myself or how I saw things, because I think that we've got to get out of the how-to expert authoritative learning, because we learn through other people's experiences when we relate to their stories. And so whether you're speaking or you're writing book, when you share your true personal vulnerable stories, the audience or the reader or the participant can go, wow, I can totally relate to that. I had no idea that someone else experienced this too.
So I
think that's powerful. Then that there's an opening where someone can create some introspection for themselves through another's experience, as opposed to being told, this is how you do it, or this is how you make this change, or this is how you fix it. We have to relate to stories, and that's how we connect.
I so appreciate your awareness. That's such a big thing to do in this day of experts and gurus and wannabes and, you know, people. It's kind of like in the past with the self-help, it was always, I've got it all together now so I can help you. And everybody's just a work in progress. I mean, Wayne Dyer always talks about it. You can see that he's actually speaking things to us that he tells himself and that he's working on all the time, you know?
Yeah, because we teach what we learn, and you only have to be two steps ahead of somebody to help them along in their path. And that's the beauty of it, because then you can really relate. And I think for me, and this is something that I share with anybody, whether they're going to a traditional therapist, they're going to, you know, a spiritual teacher, a life coach, if that person's key role isn't holding space for you and helping you tune into your own intuition and your own inner wisdom and guiding you back to find your own answers within, then they're not doing you any service. Because that's ultimately, we all have our own answers within. We only need help and the support and inquiring within ourselves to find those true answers for us.
Well, you really will make a much bigger impact than somebody who's been in therapy for years and the therapist just sits there and sometimes looks like he's falling asleep because he doesn't say anything.
I know, they're just listening and they're not even holding space. And that's why people can spend, you know, a decade in therapy and never, you know, I went through some traditional therapy and I learned a lot. I had no awareness as to, it helped me learn why I made the choices I made and why I behaved the way I did or why I saw things from the perspective I saw them. But it didn't help me change. It was like, oh, okay, now I understand why I'm so screwed up. But
yeah.
It didn't help me fix it. It didn't help me make any real changes. So I think it can be effective from that purpose just when you're starting to gain some introspective and some awareness. But if you're not moving forward and really making shifts in your life, then again, it goes back to if their primary job is not helping you tune into your own inner wisdom and your own intuition, then they're not really serving you. And any great spiritual teacher will tell you that.
Well, I think that's why psycho-spirituality is the wave of the 21st century, and maybe even there'll be way more stuff coming up in the next 5 or 10 years that blend it all, because without that, you know, and at a certain point, we have no control. The control, we have to just surrender. And we were never taught that in therapy, you know, just surrender and go really deep within, you know, into the higher source.
Exactly.
So, you know, the other thing that was really interesting to me was you talk about women often covet perfectionism and proving their competence. And what's the biggest asset in the 21st century that needs to be fostered and invoked in the world?
Well, I think women finding courage and to find their voice. And I heard a quote, and I might not say it exactly right, but it was actually from Melinda Gates. And she said that a woman with a strong voice is by definition a strong woman. And so finding your voice, finding your authentic voice and being able to speak your truth is probably the biggest tool that most women need to cultivate. And not only to find your truth and speak your truth and to speak up, but to also, women also need to learn to speak in a more direct, powerful way, because many women have a style of communicating that's almost apologetic.
Right.
That sort of seesaw, it's not very direct and it's not very, it's not positioning them in a powerful place of articulating what they believe or think or need or want. And so I think it all goes back to the voice, and it takes a lot of courage for women to find their voice. And one of the reasons I believe it's so true is that if you go back through centuries and centuries, it's not been safe, and it's still not in many places in the world for a woman to have a voice, for a woman to legally defend herself, for a woman to physically defend herself or to speak up for herself or to stand in her rights. And when so women have been suppressed for years and years, and I think we carry that through lineage, we carry that through our legacy, we carry that at a cellular level almost in memory. And so we're in a place in time right now in the evolution of our species that it's critical that women start finding their authentic voice and using their authentic voice, and especially the Western woman.
Because I was just going to say that.
We are empowered. We have equal rights here. We have the right to speak and use our voice. And we have to lead the way for the rest of the world so we can start giving other women places in the world that haven't had the right to speak for themselves and have been second-class citizens and are still being brutalized and mutilated and enslaved and so forth.
Well, you know, even I mean, it's apparent what's happening in the world, and especially in the third world that's becoming the first world, you know, with the Muslim women and women of, you know, of the third world cultures that are now emerging. And we see that every day, but there's so many people and women here in the United States. Like, I saw some of your statistics on how many women are really CEOs and this, and it's really just a very minute fraction. And I think some of it is because the 80s, you know, we were wearing our clothes, we were wearing the padded shoulders, we were imitating men. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now it's becoming more of a powerful presence to bring in the divine feminine. And that's a very, very a challenging thing to really just move into that, because we've been programmed to act other than that.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the work. That's the real shift that has to happen. So, you know, the 70s brought us, you know, the women's lib, the burning of the bras, and, you know, it wasn't coming from the divine feminine. It was coming from a place of anger. It was coming from a defensive posturing, which is okay. That's what had to happen then to move us to another level. But now we're in a place where there's enough women, I mean, today, and I'll talk a bit to those statistics, because I think there's a story that goes with that. So today, in the United States, women earn 60 to 65% of small degrees. That's bachelor and graduate degrees. Women are 50% of the workforce. Yet when you look at overall leadership roles, and I won't go through each of them, but if you look at elected officials, political officials, if you look at CEOs of companies, and so forth, when you look at real leadership, women only account for about 14% of that, even though we look at we're the most educated and we're 50% of the workforce. And at the current trajectory, it will take 300 years for women to reach parity with men when it comes to those leadership roles. Well, here's the deal. We don't have 300 years. And the reason we don't have 300 years to reach that is because we've got to start bringing more feminine balance into the world. And I don't mean more women, because it's women and men that think like women, because we're out of balance. The masculine is the linear, the analytical, the logical, the take action, the competitive, which is great. We needed that. It got us to bridges. It got us technology.
Yeah.
But we're way out of balance. And so we don't have enough, like you said, women were wearing the suits, but they're basically, you know, a woman dressed kind of like a female version of a god, right? You know, in the suits and how they used to dress. Mm-hmm. And that's starting to shift, thank God. But I still see a lot of women that only wear suits in business instead of wearing, you know, professional dress and so forth, which I find interesting. But the point is the feminine's got to come in, right? We've got to get back to what most women naturally, their inherent skills are, things like empathy, compassion, caring about the greater good, collaboration, and heart-led leadership. So that's what needs to be brought into our business systems, our political systems, our economic systems, because if we keep continuing in this pure masculine way, taking action without it being inspired action for the greater good, if we don't start looking at the bottom line of any organization, cannot solely be profit anymore. It has to be, how are we contributing to the community? How are we contributing to the greater good? How are we making an impact that serves human beings or the planet, right? Sustainability and things like that. And women have to lead that charge. And that's where we're out of balance. And that's where not just finding your voice to step up and lean in, as Sheryl Sandberg says, and take your seat at the table. Lean in and step up and take your seat at the table, but don't do it the same old way that it's been done from this very masculine approach.
Right.
Bring in the feminine part of that. And then it's through that diversity of skill sets. And it's not about men or women or one's better or the other or one's smarter. It's about diversity, right? So through diversity of skill sets and qualities, we have better creativity and then greater success in whatever we're trying to accomplish. And that's the part that gets missed, is because so many of these women's organizations today are still about the equality movement. And they're still taking a defensive posture against men and us versus you. And it's not about that at all. And so when we start creating that inclusion and allow the room for the diversity, we're all going to be better off. And so what's interesting to me is when you look at those skill sets. And I don't know why. I think today, because a lot of it still happening in a vacuum with women, but I think men are a little bit apathetic. They just don't even realize this is an issue. Or they're fearful of what's their role if women step up and
yes.
start, you know, taking
yes.
half of it.
Yes.
And some men are just, they have a huge threshold for emotional pain, and they don't really realize how bad off we are, and that if we don't start shifting, we're not going to survive here, right?
So this yeah,
is
it's,
way,
the final
this is
days.
Way deeper than women. This is about human evolution and
yes.
getting to the next level.
Totally. I just get excited when you say stuff like that, because we're really at the final hour of, you know, there's, you know, it's very, I mean, and yet we have so much to look forward to, so.
Yeah, it's just time. It's just this time, and there's this movement that's happening, and it's just exciting to be aware of it and to be a part of it, and for me to just be contributing in my segment, and mine is really turning corporate women onto this. Or any woman that really wants to succeed and get out of her hiding strategy to not play big and not put herself in the arena to have a voice and share something that's different.
Well, I have so much more I could talk to you about. We'll have to have you on again, because you just inspire me, and I just think you are just fascinating, and you have so much to contribute, and it's just amazing. Your just contribution is really powerful, and you know,
you.
We need more. It's a woman, a powerful woman can just render men speechless. And it's not because the powerful woman's more powerful, but because her balance just shows
yes.
what could happen.
Why do you think women have been oppressed for centuries and centuries and still are in many places? It's fear. The only time anybody is ever oppressed is out of fear, right? And there is fear, because they know that when we are in our power, we are powerful beyond belief. And I think that, but I think that's educating men in this process too, of what this is really all about.
And men too, you know, the thing with men is it's not like man, woman. I mean, Carl Jung used to speak about the anima and the animus, which is, you know, one side of the female that has the
yeah.
masculine, the masculine has the feminine. And it's,
yeah.
we're all one in some way. It's just all this culture.
Yes, and we all need to create, you know, right now women lack masculine balance. Most women don't have enough masculine.
Right.
And the masculine is to take action, right, to have a voice, to have courage, to step into fear, to stretch their boundaries. And that's what's being called for women today. Now, for me, the reason I look at this sort of logically, so we've got women that just lack a little bit of the confidence and resiliency and decisiveness to bring some of the feminine strengths that we so need, and also all the stuff I've been reading, all the surveys say that the most desired characteristics for the modern leader are considered feminine. 8 out of 10 of them are considered feminine. And then also when you look at organizations, there's half a dozen studies out there that show that companies that employ the most women that compared to their competitors in the C-suite and on their boards, they outperform their competitors on almost every measure of profitability. So there's proof that diversity creates strength. And so for me, it's about, you know, if you look at women, they just need a little bit of this confidence, this resiliency, this decisiveness, and to find their voice. And men, most men have that, and I never want to speak in absolutes, but in generalization, and most men have that, but they don't have the emotional intelligence. So what's the shorter path? Do we teach men the emotional intelligence, or do we just teach women and boost them with a little bit of confidence and a little bit of voice to already bring what they have, right? Like, obviously the quicker path is to take the women and teach them some courage and some decisiveness. And then we free up the space for men to start exploring their emotional intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a whole new generation of men, I think, the ones.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But it's starting, Marjorie, and it's really exciting. And I love to tell this, because it always kind of blows people away. And so, you know, men, like back in caveman days, we had the right and left brain. And at one point, they weren't even connected. There was no way to even transition between brain activity. Well, you know, the right brain is more of your creative, your intuitive, your empathy, your emotional intelligence, if you will. And the left brain is purely more of that. It's just a giant database of everything you've learned and experienced. It's just analytical, logical, linear, and how it thinks. Well, there's only the corpus callosum is what connects is a channel in the back of the head that connects the left and right brain and allows you to transition between right brain, left brain activity. Well, in a woman, that channel physiologically is different than a man's today still. It's much larger. It's much bigger. So it explains why women can transition back and forth more easily and process quicker. So, like, guys really have a bandwidth issue, right? And so think of it in terms of this. If a couple went to, say they went to a marriage counseling session, and you're bringing up some deep stuff, some painful stuff, some emotional stuff, and usually a woman is processing all of that real time as they're exploring it. A man, on the other hand, literally will take a few days to process that and have to go to his cave, so to speak, before he can emotionally move through all that. And the reason is what I just described. Like, they can't move back and forth between that left and right brain activity as quickly as a woman can.
Yeah, and that's beautiful because that's a man. You know, it's like, it's okay. It's just, you know, they'll get stronger in one area and we'll get our voice and everything will start moving into unity eventually.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. I definitely have to have you on again because I want to learn more.
Okay. All right. I'd love to, Marjorie.
Oh, my pleasure. And everybody, I wanted to share with you that Lisa is, you can connect with her at lisamariejenkins.com. It'll be on the bio page of the podcast today. She's available for speaking engagements, workshops, and one-on-one coaching. Her book is now available at your favorite bookseller. And Lisa, thank you so much. It was just so wonderful to speak with you today.
Thank you, Marjorie.
Bye, everyone. Come back next week.
You've been listening to Beauty for the Soul with Marjorie Rothstein. For archived shows, downloads, and full guest bios, please visit fmgradio.com/beautyforthesoul. That's beauty, B-E-A-U-T-Y, 4, THESOUL.